You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today, we are in La Rosière.
Where are we, Lionel?
Well, Richard, we are in L'Ancienne École, the old school, in La Massure, not far from La Rosière, where stage 11 of the Tour de France finished. And one of our listeners, a very kind man called Simon Lund, contacted us over the winter and said, would you like to stay at my house when the Tour de France visits the Alps? And he did warn us the house is not quite finished, but I mean, it's on the way to an absolutely immaculate standard of interior fixtures and fittings, isn't it?
Beautiful. It's like something out of Grand Designs.
It really is. It's a lovely house. And he is going to be opening it up to guests who like cycling, walking, maybe winter sports also. Ideal for cycling around here. The roads are quiet and you can climb probably a good half a dozen climbs within sort of half an hour's ride of here.
So we'll take some pictures and put them on Twitter and Instagram.
We will. And if you, it's a little bit early for this because I don't think they're taking bookings just yet, but oldschoolmassure.com. So that's oldschoolamassure. We'll put that on our Twitter feed.
And thank you very much, Simon. It's very kind of you to put us up and to leave us delicious food and one or two beers as well. Mm. And we're with Francois Thomazeau.
Hi there.
Hello. Well, the race sort of exploded a bit today, did it not? Second day in the Alps, first summit finish. And, we should probably hear the tale of the étape before we say any more.
Well, it's one of those ones where the tail of the étape really is like a sort of tangled ball of wet wool. Although we know it comes undone at the end, that the headlines today are that Geraint Thomas won the stage and has taken the yellow jersey. We expected him to take the yellow jersey today, but we didn't expect him to win the stage. Team Sky are now first and second on GC, but that's only really the beginning of the story. There was a big break with several very strong riders in it, notably Warren Barguil, last year's King of the Mountains, Mikko Nieve, teammate of Adam Yates at Mitchelton Scott. Who else was in there? Damiano Caruso of Team BMC, David Navarro of Cofidis, Herrada of Cofidis, Mateus Frank, Darwin Atapuma, and so on. But the race really kicked off when Alejandro Valverde attacked the GC favourites and bridged up to his teammate, Marc Soler, who had been up the road early. And for a period, Valverde was the virtuel maillot jaune, or the maillot jaune virtuel, in the lead on the road. Then Tom Dumoulin went clear on the descent of the Corme de Rosland, and he and his teammate, Soren Krau Andersen, caught Valverde and Soler, and it really was all kicking off at that stage, although we had to suspicion that Team Sky were well in control because they had numbers. On the final climb to La Rosière, which was long, difficult in places, and a climb that was in the Dauphiné. In fact, most of this stage was in the Dauphiné in June. And in fact, Geraint Thomas finished second to Pello Bilbao of Astana that day. So perhaps not a surprise that Thomas won. But on the climb, the leading quartet were Barguil, Nieve, Caruso and Michael Valgren of Astana. At one point, Dumoulin and Valverde were riding together. And then that really left up front Barguil and Nieve. And finally, Nieve went clear on his own. And for a while, it looked like he had the stage in the bag. Behind, Geraint Thomas attacked with about 5 kilometres to go. There were all sorts of other moves with Romain Bardet trying to counter-attack. Quintana was marking the wheels. Then Dan Martin attacked and had Chris Froome on his wheel. And if this is giving you a kind of confusing picture of how the final climb played out, well, that's pretty much how it was. But Team Sky, who had Castroviejo setting a strong pace on the bottom, handed over to Kwiatkowski, who then rode, did the work of two men, really. Rode on the front for about 4 kilometres and reeled everyone in. And so when Thomas went for the second time, he was able to close down Nieve, catch him inside the final 600 metres and deny Nieve the stage win. So Thomas wins and is in yellow. Dumoulin's Chris Froome is second, Tom Dumoulin is third, Vincenzo Nibali fourth, and the other big thing of the day is that Team Lotto NL Jumbo have moved two riders into the top six, Roglic in fifth and Kruiswijk in sixth.
So much to pick over there. The Movistar trio of leaders kind of fell away today, didn't they?
The Movistar trio of leaders did fall away. I was just going to scroll through to the back of the race because three riders finished outside the time limit. Mark Renshaw of Dimension Data, Marcel Kittel of Katusha, and Mark Cavendish out of the tour, eliminated over an hour down. And there was the sad sight of seeing Cavendish come in because he was obviously honouring the Tour de France and his own sense of pride, I guess, in actually making it to the line. It would have been an awful lot easier for him to just pull out. But what was quite comical was that the entire cavalcade of team cars and every race vehicle had to wait an hour until they could go back down the course to get off the mountain. And as I was walking back up to the press room, I passed the Wanty Group Gobert team car, and the most Belgian ever,
grizzled
Hilaire van der Schurens, just said, "In uhr und drei Minuten." In a quite an unimpressed voice, that he'd had to wait over an hour before they could move down. So Cavendish out of the tour.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Hi, I'm Katie from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that cycling is the answer to many of our daily challenges. It gives me time to think and relax. It's my favorite form of transport, and it's helped me see the world in a different way. It's a part of my life that I couldn't do without. Riding with Rafa can introduce you to community that you might not know existed, and bring you new friends and adventures. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world, with 300 rides a week, with thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Yes, thank you very much to Rafa, our headline sponsor, and the invitation is there to you to ride with Rafa or to watch Tour de France in one of the Rafa clubhouses around the world. I said last night, if you have been riding with Rafa, if you're a Rafa Cycling Club member or anybody else and you're a listener of the podcast as well, we'd love to hear from you. Get in touch, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com or Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. So much to pick over today. I mean, Movistar, that three-man leadership, it's very much a moot point now. Quintana is the best place. Actually, Landa remains the best place. But yeah. Landa was not particularly visible today. And Geraint Thomas obviously won the stage. Now, lots of talk about Thomas and Froome and who will be the leader of Team Sky. As Geraint Thomas said in his press conference afterwards, no question in his mind about who the leader is. It remains Chris Froome. But what do you think, Francois?
I think I should probably pull out, because, I mean, the story today, it, in spite of all the events, is a strictly British affair. One and two in the GC, one and three in the stage, and then Mark Cavendish, at the rock bottom of the day. What else? The rest is only... you couldn't call them fireworks, but it was only crackers, It was like, and I'm afraid that until the end of the tour, the only story left will be Froome or Thomas is going to be the Team Sky leader, and in any case, one of those two is going to win the tour. So it's nothing new. I mean, in the nearly 30 tours I've covered, usually after the first mountaintop finish, you get a much clearer view of things. We were hoping in a way, because Chris Froome is taking time to get there in the top spot. He now even let his lieutenant Geraint Thomas take the honors for a while. So he's going there slowly. But I mean, the rest is relevant. I mean, everybody thought it's a short stage. It's the first mountaintop finish. Everybody's kind of in the same minute or 2 minutes, except Rigoberto Urán. I had even a couple of team directors in the morning, like Philippe Mauduit, who's Dan Martin's sports director, saying, "Oh, nothing's going to happen today. It's going to be a waiting game again." you know, others were saying, yeah, we'll see the breakaway go like last year when Warren Barguil won in Foix. We're going to see the same sort of things happening, and maybe that there'll be little skirmishes in the final climb. This is not what happened at all. I mean, on such a short stage, and even before, I said it yesterday, and I really believe that L'Alpe d'Huez would be the decisive moment. Well, actually, a short stage of, you know, one of the shorter stages of this Tour de France was enough for Team Sky to prove that they're once again one of the probably unbeatable.
But it's deflating, isn't it, when you're watching the first decisive stage, that first decisive moment when the big guns are kind of going for it, and the riders who you hoped would mount a challenge just fall away. Roman Bardet, Nairo Quintana. It's, and especially with so long to go of the race, it's disappointing. Even I'm sure even if you're a Froome or Team Sky fan, we want an interesting and open race. Now, I think it's premature to say the race is over, and nobody's talking about Tom Dumoulin, who I love the way that he pipped Froome for second on the stage. That was good. Considering the effort he'd made today, we worried that he'd be caught on that final climb and then would lose time, because it was a gamble to do what he did and go off in the way that he did. But it was a great move. It showed great aggression. He had great legs, obviously. And, you know, he, although he perhaps doesn't have the team, is there. He's there, and yeah, he looks good.
I mean, I should be a happy guy, I mean, tonight. And I am in many ways, because Geraint Thomas is one of my favorite riders. Great guy. I mean, we discussed Geraint Thomas at length in the past. You know, does he have the ambitions? Does he have the stature? Does he have the need? And, does he crave, being a team leader? I don't think so. But he certainly has the talents. So it's nice to see him there back in the yellow jersey, because he held it for a while last year. It's great to see, Chris Froome, slowly get to the point where, he could win a fifth Tour de France. And it's great. And Tom Dumoulin is my favorite rider, of all. I remember about 4 years ago when you asked me who was my man of the year, I cited Tom Dumoulin. So I'm glad to see him there. But the feeling I had at the first, and we might not be far from the top three, from the podium in Paris, with a question mark on Geraint Thomas' ability to stand 3 weeks. But but in the same time, yeah, as you say, I mean, it seems to me that once again, the trend in Grand Tours in the past is the guys who really make the big impression on the first mountain stages do not crack. They're the ones who usually keep, leading the way all the way to Paris. It might be interesting for once to see, because there are a few question marks on Froome's form after the Giro, Dumoulin's form after the Giro, Geraint Thomas' ability to stand 3 weeks. So if these three, in the third week started to feel the efforts of the Giro, maybe a fourth man could crop up. But I really can't think so.
You spoke to Dumoulin at the finish, yeah. Francois. Let's hear from him.
Søren Carl Andersen, we hit him in the break, and he's a madman in the downhills. So I told him to go in front, to take it fast, but not risky. And then suddenly we had a gap, and he did such an amazing job. I think the whole team was absolutely amazing today. I had a lot of guys with me, especially compared to yesterday when we were slightly disappointed. But today they were amazing, and I learned to ski in this village when I was a little kid. My uncle rented a big house here, and we were there with the whole family, and he told me to ski. And this spring he passed away, just 2 weeks after my aunt also passed away. So my dad lost his sister and his brother within 2 weeks, and today I really wanted to perform well for them, and I hope I did them proud. And that was really special for me to finish in this place. Yeah, today I had a good day, and maybe I pay for it tomorrow, but at least I have today, which I'm really happy with.
I think the thing is about today that teams did try things. I mean, we Francois, you've given Movistar a bit of a hard time when we've been talking in the car about how they never, despite all of their might, they never really seemed to go on offensive. And they did try something today. They had Alejandro Valverde up the road, and all that's really achieved for them is that Quintana and Landa are just a little bit further off the pace, and Valverde is now more or less out of the picture. I mean, 4:28 down, you know, that he's not going to come back from there to challenge for the win, certainly. Yeah, and other teams, you know, will look at today and just be kind of devastated at the damage it's done. I mean, we know Bauke Mollema was suffering with injuries, but you would have thought, you know, would be able to hang around for maybe these Alpine stages, or at least until Alpe d'Huez, and maybe see how he's going there. You know, Rafał Majka, who had a pretty textbook first 8 days, certainly crashed on the cobbles. You know, he's now out of it. Pozzovivo for Bahrain Merida, I mean, he's here really to support Vincenzo Nibali, who lurks at least still. Adam Yates, I mean, the big question for me today was, what was Mikel Nieve doing in that break for Mitchelton Scott? Now, on the one hand, you could say, well, he was up the road, perhaps as a helper for Yates, if Yates was feeling good. But when I asked Matt White about that at the finish, he was a bit coy on that. He wasn't trying to give the impression that that was the kind of the tactical plan, which makes you wonder, well, what was he doing up there, leaving Yates with absolutely no one available to support him? I think that probably that was the plan, but then Yates wasn't feeling good, and Matt said that they'd given him some bottles at sort of 20 to go and 15 to go, and he just ran out of legs, basically, whether it's the heat that got to him or just the searing pace, because the pace was just relentless from Team Sky on that climb. And it is kind of telling that at the moment that Yates was going backwards from the GC group, that was roughly the time that Nieve went forwards and tried to go on and win the stage, and sort of double heartbreak for Mitchelton Scott, really, because pipped so close to the finish, but when you saw the way Thomas blasted past Nieve, right. I mean, it was as if Nieve had ridden the stage twice and Geraint Thomas was just getting going.
All the rest is anecdotal, you know, like you mentioned Movistar. What did they do? They managed to lose one of the three leaders, Valverde, because he attacked too early. What did Sunweb do? Well, as Dumoulin said, and you just heard it, he was in the attack almost unwittingly, because he followed his teammate in the descent, Tom gave a good story about learning to ski in La Rosière, and that's why he attacked in the descent, and a tribute and homage to his uncle. This is the sort of stories we are going to write and talk about now, because the main story who's going to win the Tour is over, you know. So it's now left to the bits and pieces. A small one about Romain Bardet, second 2 years ago, third last year. His podium placings seem more and more in jeopardy. He lost two teammates today, Mathias Franck, who already came as a substitute for another rider, crashed. Pierre Latour is still in a white jersey, but he's a little bit too short to help him out. He tried to attack two or three times, didn't look very convincing at all. And I talked to his manager, Vincent Lavenu, and I tried to say exactly the words he used. Vincent Lavenu said, well, we knew the collective strengths of Team Sky, but it was even more impressive than we thought. And now we know that the best two riders in the peloton in the Tour de France are in Team Sky, and for me the number one is Geraint Thomas, which was quite surprising, but that's what Lavenu said. So and he added, what are we going to do now? Well, hopefully we'll try to attack like Dumoulin did today, but he said, I hope that, you know, most of the riders have not already settled for third place.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast Team Car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode of the Cycling Podcast from the Tour de France is sponsored by Beer 52. Beer 52 returning as a sponsor. Great to have them back on board. You listeners out there, how would you like to get your hands on a free case of craft beer?
That sounded quite aggressive, Lionel.
Well, it's a call to arms. It's a call to action. Okay. Would you like a free case? I'd certainly like a case of craft beer. And I know that our crate case of craft beers will be coming out on the rest day, courtesy of Simon Gill, our photographer friend. He's bringing our selection of summer bangers from Beer 52.
Photographer and courier.
Indeed. And if you would like to receive the same selection of beers, just go to beer52.com/cycling to claim a free case. All you pay is £2.95 for the postage.
As a listener of our show, you can try your first case for free. Just pay £2.95, as Lionel said, and that covers the postage. That includes 8 incredible craft beers, Ferment magazine, and a snack delivered with free next-day shipping. It's a no-brainer, isn't it, Lionel?
Yeah, well, as you know, Rich, we often have a light beer when we're recording the podcast. The frustration, France is getting a little bit better, but the frustration is that often it's a kind of generic lager. So I'm looking forward to having something with a bit of taste. The thing about Beer 52 is that you can tailor your selection to your taste. So if you don't like stouts, or you don't like dark beers or light beers or whatever it is, you can ensure that you don't get any of those in your selection. But I'm looking forward to seeing what the Summer Bangers selection entails when they arrive.
And it's 8 different beers as well. It's a different theme every month. I'm an actual customer. It's a different theme every month, often from a particular country or breweries, and nice variety and very tasty beers indeed.
So just go to beer52.com/cycling. That's beer52.com/cycling to claim a free case today.
We had a bit of a discussion on the way down the hill in the car about Team Sky and about Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome, because for me, there isn't really a hint of any kind of friction between them. Partly that's their personalities, and partly I think there'll be an honesty to what happens. It'll be about whoever's going best. The one thing that I've sort of discounted is if Geraint Thomas is really going better than Chris Froome over 3 weeks, and Froome has to make way for Geraint Thomas. But I don't really see that happening. I mean, I think it's completely fanciful to think that Geraint Thomas is a potential Tour de France winner. I just don't see it happening.
Well, hang on. Let's have a look at what we've got. Francois, last night, we assumed that Geraint Thomas would take the yellow jersey. What we didn't assume was that he would take a little bit more time and stretch his advantage on his teammate. But Francois, you said last night, okay, tomorrow night Thomas will be in yellow, and then at Alpe d'Huez, Chris Froome will be in yellow, and then that will be that.
By a minute. He said.
You did say by a minute. Now,
well, I did say that. Well, you know, I like. Well, it's part of the game, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is that 1:25 is a considerable crack for Geraint Thomas. He might crack completely. Who knows? I mean,
I just find it amazing that we know his ability, but he has never put together a race over 3 weeks. He came quite close to a couple of years ago when he was fourth with a few days to go. But, you know, the Tour, any Grand Tour, is also a test of how the body stands up to 3 weeks of racing.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be astonished if Geraint Thomas gets through these 3 weeks without a bad day, without getting ill, without falling off, without having some kind of problem. Mm-hmm. Whereas Froome has done it 6 times. He's won 6 Grand Tours. Geraint Thomas hasn't even come close to that. So as much as he's a great bike rider, I just do not see him as... It would be an amazing performance.
I agree with that completely. I mean, Lionel, you were about to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, the two things that are kind of... We know that, Francois, you've made the point before that professional cycling is a business. And you said, if the choice comes down to Chris Froome winning his 5th Tour or Geraint Thomas winning his 1st, from a business point of view, Team Sky would go with Chris Froome winning his 5th.
Would they, though?
That's a good point, because I put that that argument to other colleagues today, namely to a Reuters correspondent, Julien Preto, and he told me, well, no, I think that's exactly the opposite. I mean, Team Sky could prove that they can win the Tour with 3 different riders. In a way, given all the fuss there has been, right or wrong around Chris Froome's Albertimol case, to see a new face coming up, someone who we know is close to Braceford, who's Welsh, who's a nice guy.
And a product of that system.
And a product of that system could be even a better business choice.
A better story.
But the thing is, I mean, we're talking about the Tour de France here, and there is all this kind of history and tradition, and kind of the honour of the race is bound up in it. And people, what they don't like, and this is where the kind of the court of public opinion starts to turn, they I would say most people don't want to see a business transaction take place over the next 10 days. They want to see a race happen. They want to see the best rider win. And I think that that's one of the biggest problems Team Sky have now got. The gap is 125, so it's not just he's got a blow, or Chris Froome has got to attack. But how bad would it really look?
Simon Yates finished an hour and a half down at the Giro.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And 2 days before then, we were talking about him as a potential winner.
Yeah, but so say Geraint Thomas gets through Alpe d'Huez and they're still in first and second with Thomas in the lead. Then there's three transitional days where no real danger. Then we're into the Pyrenees where there's a couple of really hard days. But what I cannot get my head around the idea of Chris Froome attacking the yellow jersey, his teammate.
I don't think he'll have to. He won't have to.
No.
Maybe not.
I don't think it'll come to
I'd
that.
Love it. I'd love well, it and, if he and did have to. They were posed with that question.
Well, Geraint said in the press conference, it was one of the last questions, that if he has to pull at some stage, he will, you know, for Chris Froome. Mm. When you look at his parkour, I mean, his career, Geraint, maybe he's a guy who didn't have the ambition and probably the self-confidence in the first place to be where he's now. But he's also maybe someone who is discovering himself gradually. Like, I remember one year he was poised to win Paris-Nice. He crashed. Well,
on the last day.
As usual, on the last day. Yeah. And he finally won it by a very, very short margin over Alberto Contador. But he won it. Who would have thought he could win the Dauphiné only three years ago? He did. So what if, you know, the next step is winning the Grand Tour? I'm not saying it's going to happen. I stick to my view that Chris Froome is the leading favourite.
Okay, so taking Chris Froome as the leading favourite and the man who will inherit the yellow jersey at some point, the gap between him and Tom Dumoulin is currently 19 seconds. Dumoulin was penalised 20 seconds for his riding on the bumper after his mechanical problem on the Mur de Bretagne stage. I mean, that's pretty nicely poised.
Yeah.
And we've got that time trial at the end. I mean, we're looking way too far ahead. I hate speculation anyway, but...
We do. Well, listen, I spoke to Nicolas Portal, the Team Sky sports director at the finish. We've got Alpe d'Huez tomorrow. There's a lot of questions around security for Team Sky and Chris Froome in particular, because, as we know, there's been quite a lot of hostility towards the team and to Froome in particular.
That's an important question before we listen to Nicolas Portal. Is will Geraint Thomas be booed tomorrow at the start? I don't think so. It's another kind of, you know, easing up, relaxing approach, even promotional approach for Team Sky. So actually, it's kind of a dream scenario for Froome. It's a phrase he used himself this morning.
I think it was a perfect situation for Froome today, what happened. I gather there's going to be extra security around Froome tomorrow. There'll be motorbike security around the race, but, you know, looking out for Froome in particular. So big efforts have been made. The Tour de France doesn't really like to talk about that, but it'll be an added dimension to Alpe d'Huez tomorrow.
Well, I'm planning to be on Dutch Corner tomorrow, and they're a pretty boisterous set of fans. Obviously, we'll be supporting Dumoulin. It'll be interesting to see or hear what the reaction to Team Sky and Froome is. But let's listen to Nico Portal, the sports director of Team Sky.
I guess pretty much a perfect day for Team Sky.
Yeah, perfect day. Yeah, actually, you know, the guys just make themselves the last minute plan is perfect. We start with the right plan, just to ride more conservatively and make sure we will be numbers to the end in case of the things just spikes and became a bit bananas, as we said. So I think that was good. And then, you know, when you go the legs, you just want to race hard, and the guys did it. And it worked well, just perfectly at the end, yeah.
Has Geraint Thomas ever been going better than he is at the moment? And can he win the Tour de France?
Who knows? At the end, he won the stage. He was clearly super strong. We saw Froome also coming back he was quite fine moment behind BNG, and he make a strong comeback. So you can see those two guys, they are really, really strong. And at the minute, why not? You know, why not? He could not win the Tour if he had the possibility, but Froome is still, you know, someone like the man to beat.
How would Chris feel about that? I mean, because now, you know, Geraint's in pole position. He's in the yellow jersey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's been until stage two, you know, in the front of Froome, so it's not issue with that. There's a clear plan, and, you know, at the minute we can support the both. they're all strong, the both, so the strategy is working well between the both. And
any concerns just about Alpe d'Huez tomorrow? Because obviously there has been a bit of opposition, hostility towards Team Sky. Tomorrow, Alpe d'Huez is quite an intense place.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is. Already when you are a back rider, a couple of years ago, even if you're not Team Sky rider, you're always a bit afraid sometimes some of the spectator. But yes, there is still a little bit of a concern, but it's been so far really good. So yeah, fingers crossed, you know.
The cycling podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Kiss goodbye to stomach problems with the world's first truly isotonic gel. Science in Sport Go Energy Isotonic. Before you hit the wall, hit back.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. You can get your 25% off, sorry, at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. Could have done with a bit of sports nutrition ourselves today, couldn't we? We had a tough day some idiot left his wallet at a petrol station.
Richard.
He thinks he did. The wallet has not been retrieved, despite a one-hour round trip back to look for said wallet.
Well, so if you find a wallet in a place called Flume, that's in the Alps, not far from Albertville, you know it's Richard. So.
It's got 150 euros in it and two bank cards. Take 50 euros for yourself and stick the wallet in the post. Thank you very much.
Richard, looking at the top 10 now, the top three, Thomas, Froome, Dumoulin, then Nibali lurking and very quiet. We maybe would have expected something more from him today. But the two riders that really have plotted their way to this point very effectively, the Lotto NL Jumbo riders, him fifth and sixth, Primoz Roglic and Stephen Kraswijk.
And Roglic, as we discovered last night, is going to attack on Alpe d'Huez.
Oh, yes.
There was a Slovenian couple at the event that we did last night at Chalet La Giotaz, and they spoke to me afterwards, and I think they know Roglic's girlfriend a little bit, and they said that whenever Roglic has his family and his girlfriend at a race, he always attacks at the spot where they are, and they're going to be on the fifth hairpin on Alpe d'Huez, fifth from the top. So Roglic is going to attack five hairpins from the top.
Watch out for Slovenian corner. You know?
We'll never hear the end of it if Roglic does
a man
attack
in a
there.
Pub. It literally was a man in a pub told me that. Just another little tidbit from today. Edvald Boasenhagen, he had a problem apparently with his bike on the climb, and was given a bike by Team Sky.
Ooh,
for which I think he was possibly penalised or will be penalised.
Should be, yeah.
But there was no service. They were kind of stranded. He was left at the side of the road effectively without a bike.
Yeah, a two-minute penalty for that.
Two-minute penalty for taking a Team Sky bike. There you go.
Well, rules are the rules. A bike from another team wouldn't have helped Mark Cavendish. Nothing was going to help Mark Cavendish today. Richard, you losing your wallet on the short mountain stage put us in difficulty. After the near miss with the time cut yesterday, when Kittel, Groenewegen and Cavendish all came in a group with 28 seconds to spare before the time cut, everyone was worried about it today. The organisers, bearing in mind the short stage, relaxed the percentages for the time cut by another couple of percent. But it was, I mean, they could have done another 10% because Mark Cavendish was over an hour down on the winner and came over the line, didn't look his happiest. You know, not even close to being in the Tour, but you know, fair play to him for battling on. But there was a kind of a poignant moment, because Geraint Thomas came down the hill in his yellow jersey and went left into the mix zone to do some press interviews, or perhaps it must have been up to the press conference, because it was so late after the finish. And maybe 5 or 6 minutes later, Cavendish came up just with his Dimension Data team car and the broom wagon behind him. And of course, 11 years ago, 2007, they both made their Tour de France debut. Mark Cavendish went in with all the sort of bullish expectation that he would win a stage. He didn't win a stage that year, but he did win four the following year. And Geraint Thomas was 21 years old, the youngest rider in the race, riding for Barloworld, and absolutely battered himself to get round in second last place, probably about 3.5 hours down. And it just shows you, doesn't it? I mean, they're totally different types of riders, and we know that sprinters can either, you know, the fuse perhaps burns a little bit shorter for them. But today, Cavendish, I mean, so far outside the time limit, in trouble really from the first climb, and his Tour de France over. Will we see him next year in with another team, or what's going to happen next?
Or with the same team, potentially, who knows? But a very sad end to the Tour de France for Mark Cavendish, no doubt, and Marcel Kittel as well. You know, two guys who've really dominated the sprints for the last decade.
Yeah, but in the same time, there are the two guys who were expected to win sprints and who didn't do anything in the sprints. And but you know, I'm sure Fernando Gaviria, Dylan van Groenewegen, and other sprinters, Peter Sagan. Well, Peter Sagan is an exception, but they don't climb, you know, really better than Kittel or Cavendish. They didn't pull out. Well, how come? Because they won stages, because they still think they can win the next sprint stages. Well, one in Valence after L'Alpe d'Huez, and obviously the one in Paris in the Champs-Élysées. And obviously Kittel and Cavendish have decided that it was not going to happen for them. And instead of pulling out, well, it's kind of, a more polite way
noble,
to
yeah, most, most, well,
a more noble way to say farewell to the tour than just pulling out.
Hey, don't forget, you can listen to Kilometre Zero, our morning show, every weekday during the 2018 Tour de France. Kilometre Zero is supported by Hansgrohe.
Yes, a little reminder there that we are releasing daily episodes of Kilometre Zero, Monday to Friday. Today's was on La Course. That was myself, Orla Shinawi, and Rose Manley following La Course around, and we hear from Annemiek van Vleuten in a very memorable interview from Cecilie Uttrup-Ludwig. Tomorrow's episode is Francois recalling the Festina scandal. Francois was actually the journalist that broke that news. So I think we're calling it breaking news, are we?
I think we are, yeah. It's going to be in two parts because it's quite long. The first part deals with the way Francois' news agency Reuters broke that story. And it's a study of the kind of the journalistic landscape of the time. And I think there are really some really poignant points about how news and facts are disseminated now in the era of Twitter and social media. And the bit that really fascinated me, Francois, was when you were talking about how certain of your sources or of your freelance journalist sources you had to be before you could press the button and publish that story. These days, I mean, we're all kind of guilty of it in a way because we publish on Twitter and then have the freedom to retract a bit later, or we can couch in the terms of speculation. But you were dealing with such a serious news story.
A friend of mine, Graham Hurd, likes to use the expression, he opens his mouth and lets his belly rumble. And that's kind of what Twitter is, isn't it? Can we call Orla through? Orla, because Orla was on a special mission today with the Cofidis team.
So I spent the day with Cofidis, mostly in the team bus, with Cedric Vasseur, their still fairly new team manager, used to be a Cofidis rider. It's 11 years today since he won his stage of the Tour de France, which launched him into the yellow jersey. And it's been 10 years since Cofidis won a stage of the Tour de France. So they've been going on the breakaway every day and not quite managing it. And today was another one of those days. But I was chatting to him really about what the Tour de France means for French fans and whether it is still as French as it used to be, how much pressure there is for them to win a stage. And I guess the fame, the notoriety that all of the team and all the riders enjoy, regardless of any stage wins, just by virtue of being French. So chatted to him about all of those things and we got a little insight into the team. So it's fascinating.
Great. Well, that's coming up next week as a Kilometre Zero. Just finally tonight, I presented their Pedlar de Charme t-shirt this morning to Lawson Craddock. He went through the $100,000 barrier today for his fundraising efforts for the track in Houston, Texas. Here's what he said when he got his t-shirt this morning.
This is a great achievement.
It is a great achievement. Well, people have been following your story, obviously, and yeah. I got it just this morning. You've gone past $100,000 barrier.
No, it's truly incredible. I never really believed that it would make it this far. So for me, that makes me really proud to still be on the tour, to know that I'm really pushing and fighting along for something that's bigger than myself. So $100,000 is truly beyond any of our dreams as far as contributions to the Velodrome, and we're all so excited just to see what we can do with this.
And you're on TV more than anyone. Whenever the camera pans to the back of the bunch, there you are. I mean, how's the body now? Are you starting to, you know, recover a little bit?
Yeah, yesterday was a really difficult day. First day on the mountains, I struggled mightily, for sure. Yeah, the body's taken a beating over the last 10 days. You know, definitely just body's compensating for riding a bit different on the bike. So a lot of muscles, tendons are quite sore in other places. But yeah, just using the motivation and the support from others to keep fighting.
So Lawson Cranick, they're very proud of his Rafa t-shirt for Pedlar de Charme. We'll be running a poll later this week to find Pedlar de Charme for week two. But that's all for now. We'll be back at the top of Alpe d'Huez tomorrow. Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
No song tonight, but just a little bit of French flavor. Yesterday's French flavor was Reblochon. It's a famous cheese. You know, what Le Grand Bornand is the capital of Reblochon. Today, in the stage, the cheese you should have with your tartiflette was Beaufort. That's the name of the cheese in the area. So, you know, if you're still around, you know, really go for Beaufort. In Bourg-Saint-Maurice in the morning, there's a great place. You can buy lots of Beaufort. You can buy new one, old one. It's great cheese, and go for it.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Tom Wally.